I think I have something insightful to share about a pretext and the right way of dealing with a pretext. Just explaining what this word means. It happens the whole time. A pretext is when someone is coming with a certain complaint, but what they are really, really complaining about, either they're not aware, or they don't have the capacity or the courage to speak about it directly, so they find an excuse or they find something other than what's really, really bothering them, and that's called a pretext. I'm speaking about a pretext because we are learning and ideally living this week with a portion of Baha Aloyscha, filled with stories, and here we go. Here's the story that for those of us who learn Chitas, which means for those of us who learn the portion divided into seven little parts, and every day we learn its corresponding day. This is from Friday. Cryptically, the Torah begins with the words Vayehi Ha'am Kimit Onenim. I don't know modern Hebrew. Mis Oinanim. But Rashi says that the word means they're coming with a dishonest complaint. The Torah doesn't even write what they complained about. They came with a complaint, and the challenge that we all have, and this is not about with others, this is with ourselves, but let's begin with others. It's easier to see it there. Is that if someone is coming to me with a complaint, if what they're complaining about is not really what's bothering them, there's nothing I can do, because I can really address whatever it is that they're speaking about, but no one is going to feel content because this wasn't really what they were complaining about. Right? So easy to see it in others. And we do the same thing to ourselves by having misunderstandings or by lacking the courage to admit what's bothering us. And we'll speak some more words to that. So we cover up one complaint with a more acceptable complaint. Oh, I'm not that low. I'm not so whatever to be concerned about A, because I'm ashamed of who I am, even though that's who I am, or that's part of who I am. So I make it sound nicer. I'm complaining about B. Once that happens, everything gets distorted. Beautifully, the Torah doesn't even write what they complained about, which is the point. It says that a fire came out from God and God burnt them up. Wonderful, but there's a meaning to that. And then it says the next complaint, and Rashi says it was the same phenomenon, which was that they started to complain that we don't have meat in the desert. They complained there's a lack of meat. The truth is there was so much meat. We had cattle. We were wealthy with cattle. The Torah says that. But we were in the mindset that we don't want to eat up our own cattle. We want new cattle. We want for God, who's making a miracle of the manna, why can't God add meat with the manna? And whatever it is that we said, Rashi points out the whole time that whatever we were complaining about was not what was really bothering us. Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction is unique. You won't find in the Chumash any other time where Moshe Rabbeinu became so exasperated, if that's the right word, so anguished. You know what he asked at the end for? He began telling God, where can I get the meat? From where can we get meat for these people? God, kill me. I'm not exaggerating. He tells God, God, kill me. Whoever is laughing, it means that you came in your life not that long ago to a point where you told God, God, just take me out of my misery, even if it means leaving this world. I'm saying this lightly. Whoever's listening, God forbid, if a person has any type of suicidal thought, they should not laugh at it. They should take themselves seriously. You never know. I'm not saying this cynically. But for people who are not suicidal, even people that are not suicidal, which is hopefully, I hope most of us, yeah, sometimes the facing what we need to face appears to be so impossible that what appears to be the only way out is kill me. Now, what was so impossible? What, taking the Jews out of Egypt, that was easy? Him facing down Pharaoh, you know what kind of courage he needed to go to the palace? That he was able to do. But you see from such a story, where did he get trapped? Where the people were complaining about meat. And you know what? When Moshe Rabbeinu told God, from where can I get meat to feed all of these people? These words don't sound okay. What God tells Moshe, is my hand short? Are you doubting my ability to feed them with meat? God found so much meat for them that they died eating too much meat. That was the end of the story. But that's the tip of the iceberg.
They had their own meat that didn't want it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but they
let me
said, I don't want from mine, I want from yours.
Yeah. Let me tell you a nice Talmudic story, a story within a story. It's all the same connected. That there were two great sages that were in Tiberias, and they were going into the springs. Real great. Whoever learns the Talmud, Reish Lakish, these are the great Talmudic leaders. And a beggar was dying for food. He met them at the entrance to the spa. And he asked them for food. And Reish Lakish told him, when I'll come out, I'll give you food. When Reish Lakish came out, he died of hunger. That person. So what he said was that when he was alive, we didn't do the right thing. At least in his death, we'll do the right thing. And the right thing is to bury him. And as they chose to do the tahara, they needed to ungarb him. And they found that he had a pouch of golden coins in his possession. And they realized that he had we'll call this today, a mental illness of being cheap. No, cheap is not a mental illness, but to the degree that he was dying of hunger and he couldn't spend his own money. He needs new money for the food. And the Rebbe once spoke about, and now I'm getting off track, but there's a big message from this story, that most of us, when we perceive that we did something wrong, there's a part of us that right away goes into the mode of tshuva. Oh my God, what did I do? There are times that, oh my God, what did I do is the wrong thing to do. There are times. Which is when there's something that you have to physically do, like someone has to be buried. So instead of paralyzing yourself with feelings of guilt and shame of, I could have given him a coin before, which is what he should have done. He didn't know that he was a miser, that he had a mental illness. But he did. He had the discipline of telling himself, okay, I did something wrong. What is needed from me right now? Right now, doing tshuva is the biggest mistake. Right now, I'll bury him, and then I'll do tshuva. And because of that, he merited to find out that he never sinned. That's just on the side. But yeah, they had meat, and they couldn't spend their meat. They couldn't spend their own. And I think there's so much from every nuance of the story. Most people that I know, they spend more than what they could. Myself included, the building included. But there are people on the other side of the spectrum that since God blessed them with whatever affluence they have, they would be serving a godly purpose by spending more money. I know what I'm saying now could be not well received. Could be. I know that the Rebbe many times told wealthy people in Crown Heights, and when I grew up, there were very few wealthy families, that when they were doing a simcha, I don't know if this is for everyone, but I'm sharing it, that they wanted to minimize the simcha. They wanted to tone things down. And the Rebbe, they told the Rebbe that they wanted to be a good role model by showing people how to spend less, so people shouldn't overspend when they do a simcha. And the Rebbe basically told him that, no, you should make a big simcha. And when people have to do weddings, you give them a lot of tzedakah. The Rebbe saw that as that was a cheapness in them, that they were trying to spend less, to set a standard of less, so when other people come and ask them for help. And the Rebbe, I think, I'm not accurate, the Rebbe told one of these people that someone like you should eat meat every day. So when someone is coming asking you for help, you should not be able to tell them, I don't eat meat, why should you eat meat? Why should I don't indulge, why should you indulge? You indulge and help your fellow Jew. Okay, you wanted to ask something. I don't want to get sidetracked. Yeah.
The Jewish people went through so much in Mitzrayim, so they must have had psychological issues.
I don't know.
You don't think so? From like all the pressing and torture.
Let's go. Could be. Okay.
So whatever they were experiencing in the desert, it's easy for us to say, yeah, they were wrong, and how could they?
Oh.
But maybe emotionally they just weren't healthy.
Or maybe what you're saying is, could be, there's a lot of truth to that, that if someone went through hunger, they hungered in Egypt, they were hungered in Egypt, then they have a different relationship with their livestock. Their livestock is only in case of emergency, and they always felt the emergency is about to reemerge. Okay. So we have to say that it's easy for us to say because of their experience. But I just want to come back to the story. They were complaining that they had no meat, and Moshe Rabbeinu went into desperation, and he told God, kill me. Hargeni no haroi. Please take my life. Everyone falls into that at some point. And it's interesting, it's curious to find out what brings a person on their knees for them to turn to God and say, God, you know what? Just take me out of this. Why was this what took him out of it? Okay, so I'll leave that question open. Let me share with you a story. I know I shared this story in the past. It's a beautiful Hasidic story that is very deep. In the times of the Alter Rebbe, there was a community of Hasidim that lived somewhere in the Ukraine, and they made their livelihood by farming the land. In Chabad history, that really took off in the life of the Rebbe's son, of the Mittel Rebbe, of the Alter Rebbe's son. He actually got from the Tsar large amounts of land. He settled thousands of families, imagine, in the Kherson area, in the breadbasket of the world, maybe till today. But even before that, there were many Hasidim that lived in certain regions in Ukraine. They made a living by farming, and after year of drought, at some point, they were mamish going to starve. It was horrible, not bad. And in desperation, they sent a delegation to go to the Alter Rebbe. And they had yechidus. And the Alter Rebbe, and they told Rebbe that you have to daven to Hashem, we need rain. If it won't rain now, we're going to starve. The Alter Rebbe listened to their anguish. The Alter Rebbe did not respond. And they sensed the yichidus is over, and they understood from his lack of response, that means that he cannot be of help. He didn't respond. And they walked out of the office devastated. You know, when you have your last hope, and when you realize that the last hope is not a hope, and the Alter Rebbe's grandson, who later became the third Rebbe, we call him the Tzemach Tzedek. That was one of the many books that he wrote. And he sees them. It was not common to see a group of people leaving the Rebbe completely devastated. Most people left uplifted. Not everyone, but it was unusual. So he asked them. He says, what happened? He says, they told him the dilemma. They told him the Rebbe didn't answer. He says, wait here. He asked for everyone to put together a few dollars. He gathered 10 ruble. Let's say it's like $100. The Alter Rebbe had a secretary that Tzemach Tzedek called one of his secretaries, and he told him, I'm giving you 10 ruble. He gave him the collection, and you have to swear that you'll do exactly what I'm telling you. So he says, tell me what you want me to swear, and then I'll agree or disagree. That's a normal response. And the Tzemach Tzedek told him no. He says, no, not for this. You have to take the money, you have to agree to take an oath, and I don't know how he convinced them into it. Never do that. The story goes is that he said to himself, what will this youngster ask of me? To break the Shabbos? That's what he was saying, the Shamash. He's going to ask of me to hurt someone? Of course not. Well, whatever he wants of me, I can take an oath. So when he took the money and he committed to take the oath, Tzemach Tzedek says, you're going back into to the Alter Rebbe. He was a secretary. He was allowed to go in. And you have to tell him verbatim, if you are a Rebbe, therefore you're able to help Jews. Why are you cruel? Why are you an achzer? No one speaks that way to a Rebbe. No one would like to have those words spoken to themselves. Why are you cruel? People don't see themselves as cruel. If you're not a Rebbe, you're a bluff. If you're not a Rebbe, then you're a faker. Who gave you the right to detach the connection to this world from thousands of people? You make your Hasidim crazy, that they have to become even less removed from this world. You have no right to do so if you would not be a Rebbe. The man gave back the 10 ruble and he tells him, no, I'm not doing that. He says, too late, you took an oath. He went back into the Alter Rebbe and he told that to him. And the Alter Rebbe became very serious. And he said to him to call back the Jews from the Kherson region. They walked back into his office and he promised them that with God's help, a miracle will happen. It's going to rain. And he gave them a big bracha. And then he says, this was probably the wittiness of my grandson. Okay, first they're very happy. Then they told him, what was the wittiness? He says, it wasn't wittiness, it's a Gemara. And there was a similar story in the Gemara, that there was a drought, and they went over to a big Amoira, a big Talmudic master, asking him for a bracha. He did not give a bracha. One of his students told him, you cruel man. He really gave it to him. And then he gave a bracha. That's the end of the story. The question of the story is, what does that even mean? Well, what do I... You have to be told that you're cruel? Was the Alter Rebbe cruel? He had to see that he's cruel. What he was unable to bless before and now he's able to bless. There's something in this story that has to be explained. I shared this story a while back and I have a complete new understanding of the story. So first of all, when it comes to a pretext, which is a big part of our lives, when you feel that you are unable, let's speak about the other, to satisfy someone's need, probably you're misunderstanding their need. That's the problem. That's not always the case. I think that's many times the case. Why are you misunderstanding their need? Well, either they're not communicating their need with you. Well, then it's an easy fix. Let them get better communication. Problem is that that's not always good enough. Many times they are communicating what they think their need is. The problem is that's not their need. You understand the dilemma? We have this dilemma. So how can you satisfy something if you're not satisfying the root? Now, that dilemma isn't only with others. That dilemma is with ourselves. The dilemma is that we are constantly analyzing ourselves. We are the least qualified to analyze myself because I am part of the problem here. I have my own bias. And if I'm misunderstanding myself, how can I reach contentment? How can I feel satisfied if I don't even know what I want? Even though I think I know what I want, but I'm beginning with the premise that a lot of what I think I want is not what I really, really want. And that's true by everyone. That's true by everyone. You know, you tell a person, how are you feeling good? Yeah, do you really feel good? Yeah. Do you really, really feel good? I promise you, there'll come a point where if that person will begin to look to the really, 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 that's it. Everyone is going down the spiral to hell. That's all of us. But that's the people who are in the business of selling products, if the product is a solution to a problem, they'll show you that you have this problem, which you do, because everyone does. Okay. So the question is, how do I get to know myself better? Hold this thought. I have a very good insight. So I'm into a whole topic that's very fascinating. This is a theory, just a theory. It's very much connected to what we learned Shavuos night. We learned here a while back, Shara Bitachon. And to summarize, one of the few pillars of Shara Bitachon is the emphasis of the need of letting go. Letting go and giving it to God. You can only give it to God if you let go. I want to speak about the step of letting go. I mean, in the Shara Bitachon, it's more about letting go of control. Letting go of control. In the context of Shara Bitachon, he uses as an example making a living, that I want to make a living, and therefore I'm invested in the means that I chose or that was chosen for me to make a living, and I'm not understanding it correctly, right? I think that I'm doing it when really God is doing it, and we spoke a lot about that topic. But I want to speak about letting go. How do you let go? I'm going to speak about any emotion, all right? A person has anger. So you tell them, you know what? You got to let go. Can anyone describe to me how that's done?
Submitting to Hashem.
Admitting.
No, like just relinquishing. Surrendering. Surrendering.
So walk me through the steps. I'm asking that because I think some things have to go into every detail to understand how it works. Okay, a person has a feeling. Okay, let's speak about a negative feeling. How do they let go? What do they do? What do they tell themselves?
Feel it. Huh? Do you feel it? A certain amount of time.
Okay. So let me give you these words. Without effort, there are three ways that people who naturally pick the easiest way out, which is detrimental, they either repress or suppress, just to know in English, right? Repression is when you do something unconsciously, when you suppress. Well, I don't want to deal with it. You suppress it. And it's a power that we have to bury it. We suppress something that we don't like. Suppression. The opposite of suppression would be to vent. Expression. And one thing I always know that expression. Yeah, you're gonna get sunburnt. You're gonna
It's straightening the skin.
I know that. It's good. It's vitamin D for me. I said the same thing by her house over here. Now you're seeing what I felt like good over here. Listen to these words. When you have a bad feeling, you're angry, and you begin venting your anger, it's gonna get worse. You're gonna grow it. Doesn't go away. You can debate with this later. That expression is the opposite sign of the same counterfeit coin, which is suppression. It's not going to fix it. The third way, which most people are most familiar with, it's called escape. Escape. You distract yourself. What fuels every addiction? The addiction is the escape of whatever it is that's anguishing the person. Because when you're doing whatever that is, at that moment, that gives you a high. That takes you away from the bad feeling that you don't like. Getting properly letting go of a feeling, listen to these words, would mean then, so what should you do? I can't suppress it. What do you want from me, God? I can't express it. I can't distract myself. You have to be with it. Not to talk about it, not to analyze it, to experience it. Why don't people experience a feeling? Huh? Very good. Either they are afraid of it, it's unbearable. They are afraid of what it will do to them. So this fear, or because they are ashamed of it. Ashamed of it. I'm judging it. The letting go. Let go of your judgment of it. Not let go of it. You can't let go of it. It doesn't work that way. Let go of it. Can't. Let go of your judgment, which will then allow you to be with it. What happens when a person stays with their feeling? In most cases, when they stay with their feeling, this is an experience. This is an experience. Don't listen to these words. If you don't have this experience, you know nothing from hearing words. The feeling will change. Mamish. Mamish. And what a person will realize is that they always thought that I'm anxious. Then I discovered I'm angry. You ever knew you're angry? They never had that experience of anger. They experienced one thing. But when they are able to be with that, and it's terrifying, anxiety, for people that are anxiety, you feel like you're going to die. When you get into your anxiety, you're going to people have panic attacks, and people called ambulances. People thought that they're dying. They're terrified of it. I'm not saying for people to go there, but when it's there, sadly or goodly, whichever way, the way you have to be with it. And you have to let go of your fear of it. These words for me worked. Because you have no option.
But it doesn't mean not to take an action. Or does it mean nothing?
Well, every case is a case. If you are about to die, then jump into the pool over here, do something, take an action, yeah.
If you're angry at someone, so accept that you're angry.
Oh, for sure. Feel it. Feel the feeling.
And that should take away the anger?
I didn't say that.
Oh.
I'm saying that it's going to evolve. It's not going to be stuck.
So the first step is just to accept.
And to accept and to experience it and to let go. No, the letting go by emotions. The letting go is not letting go of the emotion. You can't do that.
Right.
People get frightened. Let go of all of the different things you did with your emotions, which don't allow you to be with the emotion. And we do so many things.
So can you give an example?
My example would be that if, let's go to anxiety, okay? For people that are prone to anxiety, anxiety is a very scary feeling. It's scary. Scary, you're gonna die. You feel like it's horrible. It's horrible or it's scary. Well, this escaping, it works. Repression works. Venting doesn't work. Venting works for a very short amount of time. But anxiety is always gonna be there. If you don't vent it, if you actually, you stay with it, you close your eyes and you wanna feel the feeling. You wanna feel the feeling, you go into it. Could be that the anxiety is not anxiety. Could be you're gonna discover that the anxiety is a pretext. It's a pretext, it's not the emes, and there's something under it.
So what do you do with that?
Nothing, you go into that now.
And then
you don't make it fake, then you actually live with, let me go to one possible journey. People go from anxious, you can go from that into anger. Problem with anger, for me, I already said, for me, anger, I was told very young that anger is prohibited. That was the worst thing. Because, you know, how can you be with anger? No, you're not allowed to express anger. You can't do an action angrily, but a feeling is a feeling. It's a feeling. It's not a godly feeling. I'm not proud of the feeling, but I have it. I have to accept it. I'm angry. Okay? And anger, mamish, can go from there to pain. Well, it gets worse, but it changes. The goal is not to get rid of it. The goal is to be with it, and something happens.
But you're not saying necessarily something good. I'm saying
something even worse. I'm saying the emes comes up. No, this is very important. Why is it important? Very good. Mamash, I'm talking about a pretext. Because we all get frustrated when someone comes to us, the parsha, and they give us a problem, but that's not the real problem. Like we feel, okay, you want to have a conversation with me, I'm here. But tell me what the problem is. Because when you give me a cover-up, it's a lose-lose. It's setting up everything to fail. You have to go to the emes. Well, I have to do the same thing with myself. What is it? And what I'm feeling is a pretext to something underneath it. And what's that is a pretext to something underneath that.
But if you don't give people the hope or the idea that it will be better,
okay,
why would they want to go deeper?
Okay, it'll get better. So let's go what happens. What happens is, let me go on this from a million potential journeys, just one potential journey. The person will actually feel that one became the other. They won't be anxious. They'll be angry. First of all, thank God they're not anxious. I'm a chaya. Anxious is bad for me. Angry is for the people around me. For me, it's very good. I'm happy with that. But then, so for the, you already benefited. But first
you need to deal with something. With
I know that, but at least, least you're dealing with the emes. Just that is a benefit.
Even that is not the image.
No, that, wait. It goes deeper. It's not that, I'm coming with a message. Then you go to, let's go to pain. And then when you go to that, the ultimate pain, now I'm saying words. The ultimate pain is loneliness. Listen to me. The root. And in there, a person finds God.
Does it all go down to loneliness?
No, I'm giving one possible way. But in other words, God... We have God. We don't even know what God means. We have the solution before the problem. And that's why the solution doesn't work. Person comes and tells you, God. Yeah. For some reason, when someone came to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe told them God, it worked. I don't know how. Why? Because when a person came to the Rebbe, somehow the emes came up. The problem came up. When you have the real problem, now you can give a solution. So if you want to be solution-oriented, I didn't want to go in this direction, it helps you even with getting the solution. But first you have to come to the issue. You have to uncover what is.
I think a big aspect of it is coming with it without judgment.
That's it. Letting go of the judgment. Don't judge the feeling. Very good. Go anger. I was about to say that for me, anger, I'll be angry. I'm not angry. I already decided when I was a child, I'm not angry. Because there's a judgment on anger. When the truth is, there's no judgment on feeling. There are no judgments on feelings. There is a judgment on behavior. That's basic Tanya. You don't judge feelings. You're not even in control of your feelings. How can there be judgment of your feelings? We call it a negative feeling because it doesn't feel good. Not negative as objectively negative. It is what it is.
When something doesn't feel good, there's an action with it.
No. No. To separate that.
Right.
No.
We need to separate that. But people are acting on their feelings.
We are. So we have to begin with the premise, like we say, when we're talking about anything beyond behavior, we're speaking about people that have, theoretically, enough self-control where they are able to fully experience a feeling for the purpose of understanding what it is without expressing it. Acting is a form of expression. And expressing a feeling, bakhlal, is not going to help you. Even talk. Angry people will go and they'll talk about it. They'll talk about it for 1,000 hours. There'll be $100,000 less in the pocket. And they'll be angry. If they got less angry, it wasn't because they vented it or because they acted on it, is because they were with it. And the letting go is not letting go of the feeling. Listen to these words. This is a good insight. It's letting go of judgment that you have on the feeling, or letting go of a fear you have of it, or of a guilt that you have, which is all a judgment on it. Let go of that. Make an effort not to add to the problem. To see it.
And
It's not okay. In other words, not yes okay, not okay. Not even in the world of okay or not okay. What is it? To know what is. And then every feeling is a pretext to a deeper feeling and a pretext to a different feeling. Who is doing that work? Who's the you that's doing that? No, this is a very conscious effort. How do you feel right now? Who is looking at the part in you to answer that question?
It's a hurry, it's a no.
No, so I'm going to call that part the witness in you. There is a part in you that God says, be my witness. Atem edai. We are God's witnesses. These are very, very important ideas. The witness is detached. Legamre. A witness is detached. Your witness in you. An awareness that is just looking at what is. Objectively. Detached. Because if you're not the only part in me that's able to look at something without distorting it, is a part in me that is detached from it. Something very deep in me, even though we can get to it right away. Whenever we are looking at ourselves, especially in the area where we're looking at a part of ourselves that naturally I'm already trained to judge it, to feel bad, to feel good. Ta-ta. I make a whole tzimis out of it to make an effort to remove of it. I'm exercising a part in me that's detached. That part in me can say, yeah, it's my feeling, but it's not me. When I'm in my feelings, it feels like it's me. My witness. The more I identify with me as I'm the witness, the more that my we becomes the witnesser, the more I will be able to get to my truth. Now what? Let's go to the story of the Alter Rebbe. There was a tension the whole time between the real truth and the pretext, which I'll call now a klipa, the way it's presenting itself. It doesn't present itself honestly. From the first sin, everything is distorted. There was a tension. There was a stira. What do you think needs to get addressed? You would think that what I need to address is the root. If I understand correctly, the message of this story is that after addressing the root, which has to come first, you have to go back to the pretext and address the pretext. Because there was always something there. This is my insight that I have from the parsha. I think in the story of the Alter Rebbe, whatever it is that these Jews were undergoing, they were undergoing financial, real agony, financial agony. But the financial agony is a klipa to some other something that they needed to undergo. And I have no doubt that when the Alter Rebbe did not give them the bracha, there was no easy way out. I mean, I know this is, everyone deals with it differently. People speak about emuna and bitachon. You know, this, we have other gevaldik stories that when the Rebbe Rashab, when the Rebbe Marash passed away, it took 11 years until Lubavitch had a new Rebbe. 11 years. And in our culture, we know that for those of us who remember, when the Rebbe is available, the Rebbe was so available. When the Rebbe was alive, he answered you, he guided you, and he's not here. And there was a person that was in financial, real dire straits, and he needed guidance. And when finally the Rebbe Rashab became the Rebbe, 11 years later, this guy was already, who knows how bad off, he finally had a yechidus. And he walked in there and he told the Rebbe, you're my only hope. After all of the 11, now you're my hope. The Rebbe Rashab told him, I'm not your hope. I cannot help you. Told him that very forcefully. He was very young. The Jew walked out and he fainted. So the Rebbe Rashab's older brother, Rav Zalman Aaron, his younger brother just became a Rebbe. Again, he remembered, you walk into a yechidus, you walk out, you're uplifted. Here a Jew walks in, he walks out, he dies. He fainted. He told his brother, what did you do? So his brother says, a Yid comes and tells me, I'm his hope. God is his hope. And the Rebbe told him, I know exactly what happened to him. He placed his hope in man. When he left his office, he realized that there's no one other than God. And that's why he fainted. So there's some purpose. And by the way, the root of it all is a disconnect with God. And coming back to my Alter Rebbe story, the Alter Rebbe not giving them a bracha was somehow helping them in the root of the problem. Come back to the parsha. What we see in this parsha is that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to detach himself. He wanted to die. He doesn't want to be here. He doesn't want to be in the Olam HaSheker. What did God, who knows the story, what did God respond to? After he told God, can I give them meat? There's not enough meat in the world to give them, because it was a pretext, not because he didn't believe that God can give them. But what did God do to him the first thing? You know the story? God told him that you're going to appoint 70 elders and they will become prophets. They will become prophets. I'm not going to get into a whole, I'll speak about this part on Shabbos when I talk. But the root of everything, but you have to appreciate it when you get to the root, it was a lack of connection to God. And Moshe Rabbeinu needed to see that other people can become elevated like he is. The Bnei Yisrael needed to see that even if you're not Moshe Rabbeinu, you can become a prophet. You can really converse with God. That's a prophet. Someone who's talking to God. We all talk to God, but there's talking to God and there's really talking to God. And we all know what that means. Sometimes, normally when we're in real dire straits, we mamish talk to God. Like we experience, we're talking to God. And sometimes things happen to us where we really hear God's response. People needed to see that. Not the one Moshe Rabbeinu. That the Amcha, that we are able to connect to God. That was the root. But then God did something very important for us. After he began to resolve the root, nothing is fixed in 1 second. God told Moshe Rabbeinu, if they came with a pretext that they're missing meat, we have to deal with the pretext. And then you'll complete. Then you did your job.
Can you explain that a little more?
Very good. So give me an example in your life of a pretext, because I think this for me is a real topic. Where you have a dilemma, and then at some point you realize that you're not resolving the dilemma because it's a cover-up. And what my message will be before the example is that the first step is find the root. Find the root. It's a big avoida. And begin to address the root. But don't stop there. Don't think that just because you dealt, I'm calling the root the heavenly. Just because you dealt with the heavenly, it doesn't mean you did your job. That we have to deal with the soul and with the body.
Right. So like Ashkaka practice, if somebody has a complaint that isn't the root.
I think anyone, and if you want to blame it on your kids, when our kids, not you, when the younger kids, when they come and they come with a complaint, and the parents know that this is just an excuse.
Yeah.
The fact that the child chose that as an excuse, they're onto something. That also has to be resolved. More than, I don't see it as Ashgacha Pratis.
The greatest example that they could have thought of to make as an excuse.
Because, okay, you're angry with someone. You're really, really angry. Maybe you don't even know, or maybe you know and you're ashamed or afraid to say. But then you find, when they do something that's a little bit wrong, aha, you see?
You always do that.
So that aha has to be addressed. That's what God told Moshe Rabbeinu at the end.
So what was it?
In their case, they wanted meat.
No, so what was the underlying issue?
The underlying issue in the root, Yafa, yeah. is a disconnect from God. I know these words sound trivial because we're so far away from that we don't see. I remember when I was young, and we used to go out with Tzoyim Chabad boys. We went, you know, storefronts and we're selling and we're putting on tefillin. I think I was 16, not older than 16, maybe even younger. And a person that he must have been married or not, he had a store, told me, you know what the problem with you guys are? That you have the answers before the question. And that was such a good thing for me to hear. I'm still benefiting from that. We have the answers before the question. That's why the answers become meaningless. Like, how is it possible that for people who grew up religious, for us, we go into shul and it doesn't move us? And I saw people going into shul that they were entering the Holy of Holies, Bali Tshuva, when they began their process, before we ruined them. Mamish. Because they understood a problem. And when you get to the root, Yiddishkeit is answering that. If I don't see that, Yiddishkeit won't be answering to anything. It's going to become a burden for me. Oh, I got to go to shul. I got to daven. Nebuch, woe to me. I have to wake up. I have to go daven. Like you can talk to God.
How do you fix that?
By getting to the root first.
So they get to the root.
In other words, the root was a disc. The root is an experience. I'm calling it now loneliness. I'm sure it goes deeper than that. And that is a disconnect from God. The only solution for that is God. There is no other solution. All of the socialization that we do will never address that. That's why in the heart of heart, it doesn't matter. Let's say if it's a married couple, you're going to have a great marriage. Amen. But there's going to be something that's not full. That's because it's God is supposed to be there. We place people where we're supposed to place God.
So did they fix it?
It began. The 70, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, first create 70 prophets. With a lot of detail. But this prophecy means that there were people that yesterday were common people. Some of them didn't even go into the Oyel Moed, the Eldad Umeidat, whoever reads the story. There's a lot of nuance there. But we need to see the possibility of really connecting to God on a whole new level. Like, wow, that I can do it. Not that, look at that person. That means nothing to me. The need of looking up to others, which is very important when people are young, becomes an illness for mature people. I call that the illness of discipleship. It's an illness. When you have to perpetually be a disciple. You're always looking for, wow, that person. That's a cop out of you becoming that person. It's a cop out. It's almost mental illness. So it's a weakness, but I think it could become mamish a mental illness. And it stints growth. So when we began, we all need to have a guide. We need to have a rebbe, and we're lucky. We're chassidim. And we'll never be a Rebbe, that's not what I'm saying. But we have to see ourselves being able to exponentially grow. That's a good way of wording it. and going from a non-prophet to a prophet vis-a-vis relationship with God. That's what I mean by growth. That however it is that we are approaching our Yiddishkeit right now is so shallow in comparison to a prophet's relationship with God. And I have to see that I have that ability.
That's so positive, because to me it sounds like they didn't have bitachon. Perfection wasn't enough for them. They needed animal. And they didn't want to use their own because they didn't think they were going to get any more. And so Hashem said, you guys are lacking in connection. And Moshe Rabbeinu wants you guys to be connected. So I'm going to give you a conduit that's one level lower.
I'm going to show you that you can get that connection. And that's what that's my modem.
No.
You need to see those people were a couple of steps ahead, but they were not Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right.
I need to begin to see that what I'm lacking, what did they want? You know what they wanted? They wanted God. Moshe Rabbeinu showed them how they can get it. Not for free. You can get it. Mm-hmm. But that is not enough. Because if they ask for meat, you have to give them meat.
And he gave.
And the people, the people that were overindulgent, some people died. Don't look at that part. That's the pshat. That also. But I'm saying the takeaway for me was with this concept is that two steps. That first of all, in most cases, when people come with you with a complaint, this happens to everyone. When people come with you with a complaint, don't take their complaint on face value, because they don't even know what's bothering them. I'm beginning with that. I'm not talking them down. I'm talking myself down. I don't even know when I am in a bad mood and I'm asking myself, what's bothering me? I don't know. Now, I begin with a klipa, with a pretext. This is what I think. But if I would only be able to stay with it long enough without distorting everything, which is something that we all do, or suppressing it, or escaping from it, then I'm going to discover that this klipa has embedded in it something different. Not good, bad. Doesn't matter, I'm judging it, but different. First of all, it's a change. It's like going from Miami to another hell place. Hot. But it changed. You changed the scenery. Not like Gan Eden over here. Even in the sun and in June with the jacket, I'm surviving. Nowhere in the world do you have this. LA, Gan Eden for you guys listening out there. Come to LA. So yeah, change. And then ultimately it becomes a religious experience, whether we like it or not. We mamish connect to God.
Okay.
So it comes at Tzemach Tzedek and he tells his Zaydem, you're amazing. You got to the root, you know the root, you didn't respond to them, you are addressing the root. Don't lose touch with this world. They need rain, give them rain. That's the beauty of the story. That God is not to be found in the heavens. God is not to be found on the earth. God is to be found both. You have to have Gashmias and Ruchnias. You have to have both. Then we got it right. If you only go to the root.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Okay, that's
dynamic between two people, obviously. Somebody has a complaint, somebody's trying to go
That's your role. Sometimes that's not your role. Sometimes the role is just to listen to the complaint.
So that's what I was going to ask. If they're complaining to you, obviously they want you to change something.
No, not necessarily true. I mean, I was told rethink that way. No, sometimes they just want someone to hear the complaint. I'm saying in the scenario where they want you to fix something, this all, I'm happy you were bringing this up before we press stop. Many
right.
times people are complaining because they want to be heard. Some people feel they're not heard.
Validation?
They need validation. And ultimately, same thing. You know who can, the only one that can validate me? Only. That's the problem, is God. So when I come to another fellow human being and I put in them something that is not for them to do for me on the level that I need it, but on a less deep level, we have to learn how to validate for each other. So if I'm coming with my issues to you, many times I just want to be I want to be heard. But that's not our conversation. My conversation is, that's why kids are a good example. They're angry about something. They're upset about something. They're coming to you with a complaint, complaining.
It's a general complaint. It's not a complaint about you. It
doesn't make a difference whether it's for them. It doesn't make a difference whether it's you or someone else. They're coming to you with the hope that you can resolve their dilemma.
But it's not your work to do that, right?
Why not? As a parent? One second. As a parent.
Okay.
Let's go. Our kid in school is being bullied. I want to give you an example. Your kid is being bullied by Chaim or by Sarah. Okay, now what do you do? No one hears Sarah, hope not. So Sarah is the bully. the root, think about it. The root is now I'm the parent. I'm aware that there's something in my child. I'm not blaming the victim. But there's something in my child that needs to be strengthened for him to learn not to allow himself to be bullied. And that will be the biggest gift that me as a parent can do for him. Because if all I'm going to do is resolve the pretext, I'm going to go and I'm going to call up Sarah's parents and I'm going to give it to them. And let's say it will work. Tomorrow, Rachel will bully my child. We all know that. So the problem is deeper than Sarah. And let's say you resolve that. Help your kid with Sarah also. Then you did your duty. You went to the root, you went to the heaven, you became very deep. But don't think that doing that is the end of the story. This is my understanding, that God told Moshe Rabbeinu the root. And then he says, you know what, they want meat, let's go, you have to give them the meat. And what happened to them is a whole different story. Some of them enjoyed it, some of them overindulged on it. But if we were to first resolve Sarah, unless our kid's life is in danger, we're making a mistake. What's the first thing is to remember everything is a klipa. There's always deeper. And there's no end to that. And it's deeper. And it goes deeper. And it goes deeper. And always come back. I think that will be the best way we can be of help to each other. First go for the emes, to the best that we could. And then come back to their klipa issue. And also do your part in helping them. You're going to feel satisfied. You're going to feel then, when you hear it, you say, exactly, that's the way to do it. Not dealing with the chitzonis. But not only dealing with the pnimius. That's the meaning. The trade is not in the heaven. Dealing with both. God is in both. And all godly people have both. That's the beauty of Yiddishkeit. That Judaism doesn't allow the God to be in the heavens. God is everywhere. We have to be balanced. That's just another way of understanding it. All right, Chevra.
That was really good. Thank you.